Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 18, entitled Diti Vows to Kill King Indra, text 35.
Tasmat pativrata narya shriyas kama sumajame yayante nasya bhavina patim atmanam iswaram.
My dear wife, whose body is so beautiful, your waist being thin, a conscientious wife should be chaste and should abide by the orders of her husband. She should very devoutly worship her husband as a representative of Vasudev. Text 36.
Soham tayarchito badre idrik bhavena bhaktita tam te sampadaye kamam asatinam sudulavam.
My dear gentle wife, because you have worshipped me with great devotion, considering me a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I shall reward you by fulfilling your desires, which are unobtainable for an unchaste wife. Text 37.
Ditiruvacha
Ditiruvacha
Varadayadi me brahma
Varadayadi me brahma
Putram indrahanam brine
Putram indrahanam brine
Amritcha mritta putraha
Amritcha mritta putraha
Yena me gatito suto.
Yena me gatito suto.
Diti uvacha.
Diti uvacha.
Diti said.
Diti
said.
Varadaha.
Varadaha. The giver of benedictions.
The giver of benedictions.
Yadi.
Yadi.
If.
If.
Me.
Me.
To me.
To me.
Brahman.
Brahman.
O great soul.
Putram,
Putram, a son,
son.
Indrahanam,
Indrahanam,
who can kill Indra.
Vrine,
I'm asking for.
Amritjam,
immortal.
Mitra putra,
no, Mirta putra,
whose sons are dead.
Aham,
I.
Yena,
by whom?
Me,
my.
Gatito,
were caused to be killed.
Suto,
two sons.
Translation. Diti replied, O my husband, O great soul, I have now lost my sons. If you want to give me a benediction, I ask you for an immortal son who can kill Indra. I pray for this because Indra, with the help of Vishnu, has killed my two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. Purport. The word Indrahanam means one who can kill Indra, but it also means one who follows Indra. The word Amrityum refers to the demigods who do not die like ordinary human beings because they have extremely long duration of life. For example, the duration of Lord Brahma's life is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Aharyat Brahmana Vidu. Even duration of one day or 12 hours of Brahma is 4,300,000 years, or 4,300,000 years multiplied by 1,000. Thus, the duration of his life is inconceivable for an ordinary human being. The demigods are therefore sometimes called Amara, which means one who has no death. In this material world, however, everyone has to die. Therefore, the word Amrityum indicates that Diti wanted a son who would be equal in status to the demigods.
Om Agyanati Manandas.
Both Diti and Kashyapa were exalted personalities, personalities that had taken their birth in a much higher condition of life than the residents of the age of Kali. Diti was not married to an ordinary husband. Kasyapa was a great sage, a great Brahmana, who fully dedicated his life to following the scriptures, teaching the scriptures, yajan patan patan danapati graha. In that way, he was an exalted, exemplary person. And thus, she worshipped her husband. She worshipped him because he was worthy of worship. He was a saintly person, as a husband is supposed to be. The responsibility of becoming a husband is not just a matter of saying yes and accepting some lady as a wife. The responsibility of the husband is to act as a spiritual master. And then, by such actions, by such exemplary behavior according to scripture, automatically the wife will follow. Automatically. And automatically the wife will be respectful. So such a relationship existed between Diti and Kasyapa. So when she was offering all respects to her husband, it wasn't something that was enforced by etiquette. You have to do so. No, it came from the heart, because she actually appreciated Kasyapa as a saintly person. And that's one point we can draw from this narration. We can draw that point of taking it upon ourselves to become more like that, to become saintly persons. Because the Grihastha ashram is an ashram, a shelter from material existence. It is an opportunity to from that situation, serve Lord Krishna, and then cultivate one's love for Krishna. And in this way, serve Krishna in unalloyed, loving, devotional service. Savai pum saparu dharmo yato bhaktira dukshaje ahaitakiya patiyata yatma supersedati. That kind of devotional service, which has no other motivation and which is uninterrupted, such kind of devotional service can fully satisfy the heart. Prasidati, prakrista rupena sidati, can fully, completely, in its full-fledged form, satisfy the heart. So that is the way of life. Nonetheless, although Driti and Kasyapa were exalted, both also showed moments of weakness in adhering to Dharma. And Diti, in this case, has become very overwhelmed by negative emotions. Emotions are of two natures. And in this case, it was an emotion of anger. Anger was in her heart because her two sons, to whom she had natural attachment, were killed. Killed by the Supreme Lord, but also by the influence of Indra. So she could not vent her anger on the Supreme. That was not... she knew in her mind that that was not acceptable. That much intelligence she had. It is less intelligent to become angry with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is when our intelligence is becoming completely covered over and we begin to think very small. In the Bhagavad Gita, we get the description of the Mahatma, who is the great soul, and then the opposite of the Mahatma is the Ksudratma. Ksudratma is the small thinking person, the person who thinks of the small temporary situation on earth, and within that situation develops so much emotion and so much attachment, positive and negative, who gets so much anger to obstructing elements and so on. And this anger may build in the heart and may not come out directly, but then may come out in envious behavior. So Diti had developed such anger or such envy towards Lord Indra, but not to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, maybe in her heart there was some trace of that also, but at least she checked that with intelligence and did not allow that to even rise to the surface. Therefore, all her anger was vented towards Indra. And she wanted a son who could kill Indra. She realized very well that she herself didn't have the power to deal with Indra. There's no question. But she knew that a son might be able to do it if he would have the proper qualification. And so she desired. Now, she had first served her husband so nicely and with so much devotion that it had melted the heart of the husband. But then the husband was shocked to see that what came out was this envy. He hadn't expected that. That emerged. So in the following verses, he is lamenting. He said, I came under the influence of this lady who, in her small-minded, attached emotional nature, has come up with this this desire for a son to kill Indra, which is a highly impious act. I might get involved in this now. So what to do? So he was intelligent. So he came up with the idea that she should follow he would give her the boon, yes, of such a son, providing she would follow a very rigid discipline of austerities. And if somehow or other that these austerities would not be perfectly performed, then he would take the secondary meaning of this Indrahanam, which means one who can kill Indra, but it also means one who follows Indra. So then it would be the son would become a well-wisher of Indra, one who follows Indra, the Lord of the universe. So, and he was sort of suspecting that she would not be able to follow this vow of austerity very rigidly. So in this way, Kasyapa tried to save the situation. The truth of the matter is that unless one is a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one cannot be free from fault. Even if one is a sage, even if one is a brahmana, still there is some fault because one remains a conditioned soul. Only one who is fully liberated, only one who is fully liberated is able to become 100% faultless, 100% perfect, totally beyond the defects of being a conditioned soul. In our case, we are certainly conditioned souls at this stage, receiving so much mercy, the mercy of devotional service. So we find ourselves between very exalted knowledge, but knowledge that sometimes goes beyond the understanding of the brahmanas, who do understand aham brahmasmi, but who may not fully appreciate the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we so much understand the nature of Krishna. We understand Raja Vijam, Raja Guyam. We understand the great secret of all Vedic knowledge. We understand that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Param Satyam, the Absolute Truth, is Parameshwar. That the Absolute Truth is the supreme controller, and Srila Prabhupada points out, controller means personality. Therefore, we understand that Param Brahma is the supreme personality of Godhead. That is a very advanced understanding. Then we understand that the supreme personality of Godhead may manifest himself also in different features. Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadim, Anantarupam. We understand that he has unlimited forms. And in these forms, he is also manifesting different features of his divine nature. Iti chamsa kalapumsa krishnastu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakalam lokam mridayanti yuge yuge. That in the Bhagavatam, we find on a list of all the incarnations of the Lord. And then this verse that is establishing that amongst all the incarnations of the Lord, Lord Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the original self-same Lord. He is the original Lord, as it is described in the Brahma Samhita, Deepa Chir. As from one deepa, or translated as candle, as from one candle or light, many others can be lit from the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So many other forms of the Lord are manifest. And in all these forms, the Lord manifests his features. But in none of these forms is he manifesting the same level of love as in the form of Krishna. It is said that Lord Krishna has more qualities than Lord Narayan. He even has qualities that Lord Narayan doesn't have, namely Rupa Madhurya, Venu Madhurya, Lila Madhurya, and lists of four, I always forget one. Huh? Lila Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, that's it, Prema Madhurya. Prema Madhurya means loving relationships with various devotees. Lila Madhurya, his pastimes are sweeter than the pastimes of any other manifestation of the Lord. And why is it so? Because Krishna becomes very intimate with his devotees. Because Krishna, in this incarnation, is, although he takes his birth in a royal family, he doesn't stay in the royal setting. Rather, he is moved to the house of a Vaishya, an ordinary common man in a sense, and therefore lives in a village and is accessible. Instead of being growing up in a palace and having servants and ministers and all these kind of personalities always around, where everything becomes very formal. We are about to go to Amsterdam to the King's Day, and a few years ago, actually, this king was installed, and they closed the whole city, practically. We went for the King's Day, and we couldn't even get to the normal route. Because for a king, they do that. They just close the city, no problem. Is it the king? But ordinary folks, they having exchanges with one another. So Krishna is very close and intimate with the residents of Vrindavan. They are practically his equals. One of my favorite stories from amongst Krishna's pastimes is the story where it is on that at the end of the Ekadasi day, at the end of the Ekadasi Vrat, Nanda Maharaj wanted to take his bath in the river Yamuna the next day, early morning. And Nanda Maharaj took his bath a bit too early. There was a very short time to break the fast, and he wanted to take the... So he knew that it was a bit early, but anyway, there was no time. So for practical reasons, he did so. And Nanda Maharaj then, as he was in the water, he was arrested by the servants of Varuna, who took him down the water. So all the villagers, all the residents of Vrindavan saw that Nanda Maharaj disappeared into the water. So alarm, alarm, alarm. Right? Krishna immediately came. What's going on? Nanda Maharaj is drowned. He went into the water. Krishna tightened his belt. Krishna also jumped in the water. Meanwhile, Nanda Maharaj had been taken to the court of Varuna. So Nanda Maharaj is there and seeing Varuna. Varuna in all opulence. The ocean is filled with jewels. Varuna's throne, very opulent there. Nanda Maharaj is seeing Varuna. In Dutch, we would say, now breaks my clock, you know. clock. Clock is the English word. Now, which means something like, what happens to me now is just too much for my mind. When a Dutchman's clock breaks, right? That's like, you know, then he can no longer deal with reality. Anyway, so Nanda Maharaj stood there in that mood, totally overwhelmed, no longer able to cope with the situation. Varuna, I am seeing Varuna. Next moment, Krishna appears. And Nanda Maharaj is like, his mind already shocked. He's like, what's Krishna doing here? How in the world did he get here? Next moment, so his mind goes in double shock. How did Krishna get here? Next moment, you know, Varuna falls off his throne onto the ground. And Varuna says, finally, after many, many births, this lifetime has become successful. Well, you know, then Nanda Maharaj sort of like got it, you know. It's that thing like, Krishna standing there, Varuna offering obeisances, and then Varuna says, because in this life I got the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The penny dropped. Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, my son, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Varuna, authority, says so, there's no doubt about it. And Garga Muni told me all this time that I would have a son like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but now he turns out to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who can believe it? So at this stage, you can sort of see how the mind of Nanda Maharaj was in a turmoil. Nanda Maharaj came, Krishna then, Varuna wanted to offer prayers, but Krishna was not in the mood and said, no, thank you very much, but we really have no time. We have to go now and took Nanda Maharaj because the residents of Vrindavan are in anxiety, his devotees. Then he takes Nanda Maharaj back up and everyone's very happy when both of them come out of the water and it's a whole thing. And then Nanda Maharaj tells the whole thing. Varuna Dalina, Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. At that stage, everyone is gone. Gosh, just look at that. Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of God and you never told us. All this time, you've been keeping this from us. Well, 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 well. I'm telling you, Krishna, that's really too much, you know, to hide such a thing from us, you know. I'm telling you. Well, Krishna, now that you're the Supreme Lord, you've got to show us something. Krishna said, all right, what would you like? He said, well, maybe you can show us the Brahma Jyoti. And Krishna goes, the Brahma Jyoti? That's really boring. Why don't I show you Goloka? And then the residents of Vrindavan says, yes, yes, show us Goloka. And Krishna showed all the residents of Vrindavan Goloka. And it was exactly the same as their own village. And they liked it very much. Oh yeah, that's nice. The only thing was there were some effulgent personalities, and when they sort of inquired, Who are those effulgent personalities? Oh, those are the Vedas personified. Just to show, Krishna was showing them that I'm not showing you your own village, I'm really showing you Goloka. Here are these personalities. It is different, but at the same time the same. So for a while, everyone was talking about it. I mean, have you heard? Have you heard? Have you heard? What have I heard? Have you heard that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God? No, come on. No, really. Ah, come on, not Krishna. How could it be? He's from our village. No, no, really. He's, wow, that's amazing. He showed us Goloka. No, he did. Yes. Wow, that's amazing. So for a while, it was the talk of town. But after a while, when someone would bring it up, do you know? Yeah, we know. I mean, Krishna, yeah, we know. Do you know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Everybody knows he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Old hat. And they stopped talking about it. And therefore, after a while, because no one spoke about it anymore, they just forgot. And this was the, just for a moment, the resonance of Vrindavan knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But their attitude never changed. They never started, for a moment, became overwhelmed by awe and reverence, and oh, my dear Lord, like Arjuna. When Arjuna saw the universal form and finally realized who he was dealing with, his friend Krishna, then he started to apologize. My dear Krishna, I used to lie with you on the same bed. My Lord, please forgive me for this intimacy. You are the all-pervading, all-powerful, all-knowing, and all these things. All these transcendental qualities. Aishwarya. Aishwarya Bhav. So the residents of Vrindavan, they don't have that mood. They have that mood of extraordinary intimacy with Krishna. So close. But that also requires total dedication, complete. See, when there's formality, you can hide a bit behind the formality, and you know, sort of. But in Vrindavan, there is no such thing. It's just devotion every step of the way. So that is the great gift we have received from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But where are we? Where are we at the same time? So far away. So far away from that Vrindavan that it sometimes looks like a fairy tale. Sometimes looks like a dream. Sometimes looks like a dream world. So far from us, that world of Krishna. And we are here struggling with our own petty desires, with our positive emotions and negative emotions, with lust, greed, anger. All these emotions are there within us, coming up. And we are frustrated, and we are angry, we are upset. And it can go deep, and it can build up. And even although we chant Hare Krishna, we are not free from small and petty thought. And the result is that we waste our spiritual life. And we miss this great opportunity. We cut ourselves off by our foolishness, by our frustration, by our, which is coming due to material existence. Because material life is frustrating. It is frustrating. It is never going to fulfill our desires. We just have to leave it and become very much absorbed in service. But before doing so, we have to become a servant. And before becoming a servant, we have to become humble. We have to actually give up our personal agenda. Humility means no personal agenda. Pride means I and mine, my desires, what I want. And now it's being frustrated because you are the obstacle. And that is too much. And therefore, actually, I desire to destroy you. But out of my causeless mercy, I'll just torture you a little for a while. Because I'm a Vaishnava. And merciful by nature. All these things we are fighting with. That is our personal fight to rise above this weakness, this Ridaya Dolbalyam, this weakness of heart, that is so deeply within us. That is the great struggle that we all face in spiritual life. Otherwise, it's all just very nice. All the arrangements are very nice. Srila Prabhupada explains, we have the best quality of life. We live in a palace, right? I mean, we are in a palace. We have royal dishes, right? It's like, it's inconceivable, you know, what we eat every time. People can't believe it. If you look what people commonly eat, it's not very exciting at all. Right? No, really. I mean, besides that, the abominable elements in it, leaving that aside, the quality is not very very well, but we have the best quality. Prabhupada said, best residence, best clothes, best food, best clothes, because they grow in size as we grow in size. They always fit. Very convenient. It's like, where do you find such comfortable clothes? Sometimes in travels, we go to places where it's pants only and no dhotis, and it's so uncomfortable. Right? Pants. Gosh, dhotis are very nice. What can I say? So everything nice, the best quality of life. Yes, we have all that, but internally there is the struggle. And this internal struggle is the point. Yesterday, or the days before, we have also been touching upon this theme, and we touched for a moment on the theme of the inner Schweinhund, for those who missed it, who arrived late, and which translates in English as hog, dog, and which means that inner part of ourselves who's not devotional at all. So what to do? How to rise above? It is said, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yayeta purusham param, that with great diligence, with great force, with great strength, one must take up the process of pure devotional service. That is one thing. And the other thing is that we must treat all Vaishnavas with great respect, and that includes one's own husband or wife, because they are usually one follows the Vaishnava etiquette, but when it comes to the marital relationship, then we just exempt that from the etiquette and just vent everything that's bottled up inside. That is very unfortunate. Our discussions in this part of the Bhagavatam are on Dharma. And Dharma is I pointed out yesterday, not the process for the age. In this age, particularly Sankirtan Yajna is the process. Nonetheless, we see that Srila Prabhupada emphasized that in the Bhagavatam, that narration where Kali enters the kingdom of Maharaj Pariksit, and at that time Kali was found by Maharaj Pariksit after he had beaten the bull Dharma and arrested by Maharaj Pariksit. Maharaj Pariksit was ready to kill him, but Kali fell at his feet and begged for mercy. And because a Vaishnava and a Dharmic king, when someone takes shelter, all right, he must provide shelter. So the king agreed, I will not kill. And then Kali said, all right, but then you must give me a place to stay. So he told him he could stay in places where illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, and meat eating was going on. But there were not such places in the kingdom of Maharaj Pariksit. And finally he was told, all right, you can stay in places where gold is being kept. Because where there's a lot of gold, this corruption also sets in of these sinful activities. Anyway, these four activities, panam, jutam, striyam, sunam, these four activities of taking intoxication, of engaging in illicit sex, gambling, and meat eating, these activities are actually the activities by which Kali corrupts and possesses the living beings. In the Mahabharata, in the narration of Nala and Damayanti, it's a very long story, but the point is that Nala becomes obsessed by Kali. And when Kali obsesses him or possesses him, at that stage, Nala, under the influence of Kali, takes all kinds of inappropriate decisions, and he thinks that they are his own. But it's actually Kali who's feeding him to take these decisions. So, in the same way, we are possessed in the age of Kali. Nala was an exception in another yuga who was possessed by Kali. But in this age, everyone is possessed by Kali. Itiso dasakam namnam Kali kalma sanasanam. By chanting these 16 syllables, one can become free from the influence of Kali, the sinful influence of Kali. So this is the dichotomy, or these are the opposing elements in our life. On the one hand, this very exalted insight in the amazing reality of Vrindavan. In the one hand, being able to do service there, right here, to Radha Gopinath, and on the other hand, that struggle with the age of Kali, which is so deep within us. And even Vidvamsamapikarasati, even those who are knowledgeable, they struggle also. They also struggle. Balavan Indriyan Gramo, the senses are so strong. So this is our predicament. On the one hand, elevated to the most, to the highest platform, even beyond that of many sages and brahmanas of previous yugas who were very pure and potent in terms of our knowledge, in terms of our opportunities of direct service, and in the other hand, still fall internally and struggling with that. So, Shushusho sadadana shavasudeva kataruchi shanmahat sevya vipapunya tirtani sevya. It is pointing out that by serving the Vaishnavas, we develop vasudev kataruchi, we develop taste for hearing about Krishna. And when there's taste for hearing about Krishna, then we become elevated to the realm of Krishna. It is hearing and chanting, the combination of these two, that will uplift us. Srimad Bhagavatam in particular is described as the literary incarnation of Krishna, therefore non-different from Krishna, and therefore fully able to purify us. Still, there is a verse which says, Nasta priyesu badresu nitya bhagavatam sevya bhagavatim utama sloge bhakti bhagavati naistaki, which saying that practically almost all that is inauspicious within the heart is removed by hearing the Bhagavatam. So, the question has been presented to Srila Prabhupada on several occasions, and on one occasion the question was raised, why almost? And Srila Prabhupada's answer was that when we are studying the Bhagavatam, we become learned, and then we become proud. Learning has a tendency to make one proud. Therefore, it must be accompanied by the chanting of Hare Krishna. Because in chanting Hare Krishna, how can we chant Hare Krishna unless we approach the holy name in a spirit of humility? If we have no humility, then this chanting will become a punishment. And then it will become a huge burden. How can we then chant every day 16 rounds? Then after some time we just think, I can't do this anymore. After some time we think, I have no taste. After some time we think, I can serve Krishna, but I can't chant. And many devotees come to this point where they slow down in chanting. First, don't finish the 16 rounds. What can I do? I'm so busy. Just no time. I want to chant, but I have no time to chant. And then what to do? I got behind in my rounds. But that means that life has become disorganized. That life has become wrongly organized. That the priorities in life need to change. We had other priorities and we locked ourselves in a way of life that doesn't allow us to chant. We had to change our life and free ourselves so that we can chant. Or if there's time to chant, so the no time argument doesn't stand. It means that we have put ourselves in a position where we have no time because we want so many things. And all these things consume, to get them, we have to give all our time. So, then have less things, and then have more time. No time is not an argument. But then we may say that I have no taste. No taste because we offend Vaishnavas, because we are proud, because we are not ready to just bow down and offer them all respects. We are not respectful to all living beings. The verse, Chinadapi Sunichena, doesn't just refer to Vaishnavas. It refers that one, it says, one should offer respects to all living beings. To all living beings. And that's quite something. Some living beings are not nice, but still we must respect them also in a way. So what to do? So humility is really an element which we have to cultivate to overcome this problem that we have, this lower nature within us, so that we can gradually rise and get fully absorbed in that transcendental nature, and serve Krishna, and meditate wholeheartedly on the residents of Vrindavan, and hear about their glories, and so on. And in the intermediate stage, meditating on Vrindavan may be quite advanced for us, and at least at this stage, our primary meditation may simply be the Sankirtan Yajna of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And instead of satisfying our own senses, let us somehow or other connect the people of the world with the transcendental mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And then the result is that automatically one's meditation on Vrindavan and the eternal reality will awaken. Of course, the situation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also eternal. Half of the spiritual world is where the pastimes of Krishna are taking place, the other half where the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya are eternally taking place. Some devotees are in Krishna's pastime, some devotees in Lord Chaitanya's pastime, some devotee in both. Wherever, it's all perfect. And we don't worry about that. We leave that up to Krishna. Now we simply serve Lord Chaitanya's mission by serving Srila Prabhupada and serving our spiritual master. So now that many of my disciples have come. Yes, this somehow or other passing on this mercy in various ways. Let us always think about how to pass on this mercy, how to somehow or other give some mercy to others. That is my humble request. Let that be our meditation. If we want to break our head on something, it is the nature of the living being to plan and scheme. Even animals, right, are very expert. Like cats, they know how to steal things from the kitchen. They're expert. They know. They're very expert. Monkeys know very well. In Vrindavan, we learned that the monkeys know very well when to attack and what to go for. The glasses. Because they know glasses means bananas. So, I mean, that's intelligent. That's very manipulative, if you think about it. That's manipulation. They're manipulative. So they're scheming, and so on. So the nature of the mind is to scheme, to analyze, to plan, and so on. And if we want to engage the mind and the intelligence in these activities, then let us somehow or other think about this one thing. That is my request. How can we give the mercy to others? Somehow or other. Is there a way? Is there a way? And of course, Srila Prabhupada emphasized his books as a means of giving that mercy. So sooner or later, maybe a book, even if it's left in the waiting room of the doctor, that's something. Right? Or even if you maintain a smart box in the local grocery store, you can adopt a smart box. A box that stands there with books in a stand, a little box for donations. You go to a shop, you ask them if they can keep such a box. And you go there once a month to check how much came into the box and how many books have gone, and put some new books. It's easy. You don't have to approach. You have to only approach the shopkeeper. Now that's scary, I know. But it's only once. You don't have to approach all those people on the street. So it's easy. So even if out of this lecture 10 people would adopt a smart box, I would be happy. Of course, if it would be 20, I would be more happy. And, you know, and if it would go higher than that, I would be in a state of something. I think my clock would break. You know, I think so. I mean, I just think, wow. That's amazing. Yes. Anyway, I can go on, and there are more opportunities this weekend. So later on, we will carry on with this theme. But if there are any questions or comments, then we'll try to answer.
I drink water.
Ah. Maharaj.
Just a little comment about the verse.
Please.
I think it's interesting that Diti is the one who's in her expression of her desire, her lower wish for Indra is unconsciously to herself also saying Indra Hanam, a follower.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sometimes they say Sarasvati enters the speech of a person and arranges these things, because the demigods are controlling. So we cannot exactly say how all this came about. We can't really say how many agents were involved in Diti saying this, isn't it? I mean, that's my thought on the matter. I mean, since Indra was the target, Sarasvati could have well intervened. Or another agent could have intervened, even higher up. Yeah, that's the nature of emotion. Emotion is such that one can go through different emotions at different points in a sequence or over a sequence of time that can be of a contradictory nature. So one can feel great remorse, and the anger can be temporarily suspended, and later the anger emerges, and then the remorse is totally disappeared. That is the interesting feature of emotion, that it's not consistent. And that's why emotion is something that has to be approached with reason, at least in the conditioned stage of devotional service, because it's very unreliable. One never knows which way it will turn, as we see, first remorse and then intense spirit of revenge. Yeah, that's interesting. But you see that in real life also many times in other situations where people totally change. And you think, like, how is this possible? Because the emotion works like a whirlpool and just sucks sucks the whole consciousness of the person into that one point, and then everything else disappears. And then it's just that one thing is everything. One thing becomes everything, and then all the consequences forgotten, everything forgotten.
You raise your hand, otherwise it gets chaos. Yes.
Yes, her husband was very saintly, so she respected him a lot. So she was also saintly. She also had saintly qualities. I mean, she was not like a terribly degraded personality at all. She was a saintly personality. She was a daughter of Daksha, who was also an exalted personality, Prajapati. So she was not at all like a person of like of this earth of today. We are by nature inclined towards sinful activities. Diti was by nature inclined towards Dharma, but she had weaknesses, a weakness of character. So we are maybe weaker already constitutionally than Diti in terms of our dharmic inclination, and therefore we also have to watch out that there may be negative emotions arising in us. And then we should really, with intelligence, be very diligent to just cut straight away. Not let these negative emotions grow, develop, and act upon it. We should cut them right away. I mean, we get in big trouble otherwise. We create a big mess for ourselves, for others, and so on. So, that's there. So therefore emotions must be observed. One has to learn to become like an observer of oneself. One must take distance from oneself, and there must always be this observer, which is the intelligence. And the intelligence, the observer, says, look at me. Look at me. Look at what I'm doing now. Gosh, just see. Look at how I'm behaving. Amazing. Yeah? That observer is very much required. Very much so. Yad anujasina yukta karma grantini bandana. That is the sword of knowledge. To be that observer and then to cut. As soon as we see, this is going over the line. No, we're not going over. We're not stepping over the line. No. That's intelligence.
We should become saints.
Yes. That we're mentioning in this lecture and many times also before personally to me, and I came to this movement never with this idea to become a saint, you know, it's such a, for me, such an abstract person, it's an abstract position, you know, to become a saint, and, you know, how to combine things.
Oh, my Gyana Timarandas, yeah. What can I say? You know, our eyes are blind, and now they're opened, right? They're opened gradually. So it's true, we come to this movement with one motivation and one goal in mind, and then gradually our goal changes, and gradually we become more and more aware that there is much more than we ever thought of, and suddenly you have to become a saint. Oh my God, how do I do that? And, but, you know, and do I really want that? Do I want to be a saint? Well, so that's the first question. Do we want to be a saint or don't we? In case we don't want, then again that observer, the intelligence, must say, now look at me. Uh-oh, I don't even want to be a saint. What a fool I am. So then we have to check ourselves and very seriously work hard to become a saint. Saint, as you become a saint through hard work. Hard work. Gopya kama bayat comes at dvesas chedanyayanipa. And then the end, it is said, yuyam bhaktivayam vibhuddha. The gopis, so many personalities got exalted positions by their extraordinary qualifications. But we, the ordinary devotees, we have to work hard in devotional service. That's the only hope. And one can only change if we want to. If we don't want to, it's difficult. So that's I know myself, it's difficult to change because I don't want to. That's why I'm still not a saint. What to do? Trying.